What's life like on a US Navy submarine? What do submariners think about Lauryn Hill? And what kind of whiskey do they drink? I'm Natalie Sambi, host of SimSec Sea Control Asia Pacific, your dose of PowerPoint rehab. And today, I'm coming to you again from Washington, D.C. with a special podcast with two very cool dudes from Diver Tough, a weekly podcast series in which former U.S. Navy submariners Walter Lyon and Josh Tox, a.k.a. Walt and JT, shoot the breeze on all things submarine, U.S. Navy diving community, fitness, sports, movies, and more. But before we kick off, we'll be back after this short break.
SimSec brings you the best content on maritime security, technology, history, and international affairs. And, like the United States, SimSec is, and always will be, free. Sign up to become a member today by visiting www.cimsec.org/about/membership, which gets you daily emails of our articles and a WordPress account that sends your own writings directly to our editorial staff. However, admin, special projects, software, events, and prizes do cost money. There's a new option to make a voluntary monthly donation at the bottom of every SimSec article. No matter how you choose to support us, those who volunteer for leadership, our amazing content producers, our readers, our listeners, our conference planners and attendees, and our financial benefactors, we are incredibly grateful. Remember, Sea Control is more than just a podcast, and SimSec is more than just a website. We are a vibrant community built on a passion for discovery and discussion. Sign up, write, donate, comment, or even leave 5 stars on our iTunes page. Join us today.
And welcome back. As mentioned in the intro, I'm super pleased to be joined by two very excellent dudes, Walter Lyon and Josh Toth, who host a cool podcast series called Diver Tough, in which they recall their time as submariners and life as part of the U.S. Navy diving community. But they also talk about news in their lives, fitness, sports, movies, and more. Diver Tough is available online via www.divertough.com, but also through smartphone apps and iTunes. You can also find them on Instagram at @diver_tough or search for them on Google. So today, they've been kind enough to share their thoughts on what life's like on a submarine and answer a few other curly questions. Josh and Walt, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Natalie.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Okay, so I'm quite intrigued about how Diver Tough came about. Can you guys give me just a little bit of background, perhaps, on each of you, and tell me what the genesis is of this wonderful series?
JT, you want me to take it?
Sure, go ahead. Go first.
So JT and I both served in the Navy together. We're both submariners. We're both Navy divers. And we've, you know, about 10 years ago, what was it? It was probably 15 years ago we met and just kind of we became brothers, basically. Mm-hmm. We served our Navy careers together, did all of our operations and missions together, all that stuff. And then when we got out of the Navy, roughly about the same time.
Yeah, yeah. I was out a little bit earlier. I got out in 2006, so.
Yeah, I got out in 2010, and we you know, we just kind of came together and we did all these extracurricular activities where we do like survival camping and stuff mm-hmm. together. We do Spartan races. We do all these obstacle course races together. And we always had something that we did together. About last year?
Yeah.
JT moved to the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast in New Jersey. He moved out to the Bay Area in San Francisco. And we needed something to do together. We needed to connect. And so we decided just on a whim, like everything else, we decided let's go do something together.
Let's start a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. And we put ourselves out there. And so we started doing a podcast, and it's been only 11, 12 weeks in, and we're doing gangbusters. So it's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Congratulations, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
And Josh, what's your story?
So basically, Walter did a really good job of summarizing it. I don't really have much to add outside of the fact that this has been a lot of fun. And, you know, it's really good for those individuals that maybe weren't in the military. Obviously, there's a military slant to our podcast in the sense that we reminisce about things that we learned in the military, stories we had when we were in the military, diving and submarine related. But there's also things for non-military people, you know, that can take away from it. You can learn about submarine operations. You can learn about diving. You can learn about some of the shenanigans that happen while you're underway on a submarine. And I think it's a good format for Walter and I just to reminisce and catch up and do more than a once every couple month phone call. So,
Sounds good. Well, to all our listeners, make sure you do check it out. But today we are lucky enough to have a slice of some of those podcasts. So we're going to ask you a couple of questions, I guess, a little bit about what life's like on a submarine, but and some other interesting bits and pieces. So first and foremost, I mean, you guys gave me a little bit about your background, but in terms of specifically choosing being a submariner, did you choose a submariner lifestyle, or did it choose you?
I'll go first on that one. So when I joined the Navy in 2001, right before September 11th happened. And when I went to the recruiter's office, I had sort of a different mindset of what I wanted to do. And at the time, they were recruiting heavily for submarine operations. So when they dangled a very nice enlistment bonus in front of me, that's sort of how I defaulted into the submarine community. So I did not look at joining the military and joining submarines. So I kind of fell into it, if you will.
All right.
I'm a little different. Well, you know, mine revolves around money as well. I joined December of 2000, and it was, you know, when you first join the Navy, you're what's called a seaman recruit, and you make next to nothing. We were making, it $400 a paycheck?
If you're lucky.
$400 U.S. a paycheck, which isn't, you know, which isn't enough to live off of. And one day while I was going to apprenticeship school to be a fire controlman, a weapons operator on a surface ship, some submariners came to our schoolhouse and they said, hey, come be submariners, earn an extra $60. And that was enough for me to join the submarine force. I didn't care about claustrophobia or being on a ship with 100 other dudes. I just wanted that $60 extra to add to my paycheck.
Right. So cash rules everything around you, basically. Yeah.
Kind of like.
All right. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, actually, on that note about being claustrophobic and living in a tight space with 100 dudes, what is the toughest thing about being a submariner? I mean, I heard at some of your podcasts talking about it's a tough job because you've got to be across everything and then some. What do you think, guys? Josh, maybe you go first. What was the toughest thing?
I'll actually defer to Walter on this because I can tell there's a burning answer that's
okay, go for
in
it.
His head,
go for
so I'll let him go.
It's being with 100 random dudes.
Yeah.
That's easily the toughest part about it. You're stuck with 100 other people that you're literally enclosed with in this very small space. A submarine is about 330 feet long, so it's the size of an American football field. And it's you're just enclosed, and it's much thinner than that. You know, it's only 33 feet wide. So you're literally, there's no room at all, and you're stuck with these random people that you don't know at all, and everybody is high strung. Everybody's worried because they're on a warship, and everybody's system or everybody's piece of machinery is the most important piece of machinery on the boat. So there's very little room for error. It's very high stress, and you're stuck with those people. You know, it's a combustible situation. And that is definitely the toughest part, is dealing with the personalities in addition to operating a warship. For me, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I would say that that's definitely challenging because there's definitely times when you're with the same people for 2, 3, 4 months at a time and you can't get rid of them. They start to – all their little quirks and their little nuances, and we all have them. I'm not saying I'm impervious to this either, but those quirks just really kind of start to wear on you. The other thing I would say is the distance, and I don't mean physical, although there is that. The distance that you have from family and loved ones because of the limited communications. We don't have phones. We don't have, you know, any reliable way of communicating underwater. So we get emails every once in a while, but that's really the only form. So if you're on a long mission or on deployment, you know, it can get kind of lonely out there because, yeah, you have these 100 and, you know, some odd dudes to keep you company, but you can't really communicate or have any good, meaningful conversation with family or loved ones. And if you had a girlfriend or a wife or kids, that's just kind of torturous on your soul during that time. So that's definitely a challenge.
Right. I mean, in terms of diffusing stress and the kinds of, you know, building relationships with the people around you, like, I mean, what do you guys do? Well, for our listeners, I can see you're wearing a Nirvana t-shirt. I mean, like, what role does music play? I mean, do you guys talk to me about that. Music on a submarine.
Music is essential. You know, everything is offline. So everything, before you go underway, you really have to hoard everything you own. Any kind of media that you have, whether it's movies or music or anything like that, there's no internet connection. There's no Facebook. There's no Spotify. Nothing like that. So you have, so you're stuck with CDs, DVDs, and, hard drives. And so, for anyone, you know, you literally, just mixing, you know, it's almost like jail where you're kind of trading cigarettes and stuff like that, but you're trading hard drives and say, what do you have on your hard drive? Well, I've got this, this, and this. Well, let me have it for 3 days. I'm going to upload it all to my hard drive. And you kind of just listen. So for me, it was, an eclectic mix of, you know, oldies from Elvis, Dean Martin, the classics in Motown, to all the way up to, you know, stuff that that I listen to today, like The Killers and stuff like that. So you really just have to take all of your musical tastes and just kind of put it onto one hard drive and just hope that's enough to get by for at least 6 months.
Yeah, and I would say the same thing. I think music is huge. The one thing, and I don't think I've ever told anybody this. This might be a first. Classical music was sort of my thing underway. I don't know. I never told anybody about that, but I've listened to a lot of classical music underway. And I listened to a lot of other stuff. I listened to rap and rock and, you know, oldies and stuff like that. But I listened to a lot of classical mainly because it just helped me sort of escape. I don't know about you, but when I listen to classical music, it really helps me to daydream. So, and it just gets my mind in a place where it's maybe not at where I'm at in the current moment. So that's a first. But, yeah, I listen to a lot of classical music underway. So
you are a dreamer.
I am a dreamer. Yeah, you're right about that.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, it seems like exclusive.
Yeah.
And just quickly, I mean, like, what was the most kind of valuable music to barter with other people? Or what would your recommendations be if you had to be on a submarine?
And you just have to have a big mix because you don't know what anyone's taste is.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to have a big mix of music and hope that some of that, is going to hit someone's fancy. You know, for me, it was Elvis. For some reason, I just got stuck on Elvis, and for an entire 6 month underway, that's all I was listening to was Elvis, Elvis, Elvis. But it varies. Some underways it was, you know, it was the Strokes or the Killers or something like that. In other underways it was, you know, the Rat Pack. You know, so it was, and I know a lot of, you know, sentimental music was actually something that people got into, that people really enjoyed because they're away from their loved ones, just like JT said. They're away from their loved ones and you're really feeling kind of, there's a lot of, you know, people may not want to say it, but there's a lot of depressing moods, you know, on a submarine because you're so disconnected from the world that you want to kind of embrace that feeling of sadness. So you'll see that a lot of guys will like that kind of low key mellow music.
Yeah.
You know, like the Rat Pack and Dean Martin and stuff like that.
Or classical music.
Or classical. Yeah, no, exactly. That's it.
Totally legit.
It's hypnotized. Yeah.
And of course, I mean, our recommendation to all our listeners is if they're going to be hoarding material to listen to when they're on a submarine, please go to Diver Tough and Simsex Sea Control. Well, moving on from the shameless plug, actually, you guys talked earlier. I mean, besides being away from loved ones and having the pressures of lack of communication and so forth, you know, as you talked about life in a submarine, really challenging. You guys kept mentioning there are 100 dudes. Have you guys ever served with women on board submarines?
We have. There was one occasion. Well, there was two occasions on the sub that I can remember. Hmm. One was we were replacing the reverse osmosis. We were replacing the 10K unit, which produces all of our fresh water, fresh potable water to drink. We're replacing it with what's called a reverse osmosis unit that pushes seawater through a membrane and filters it out and cleans it up and makes it suitable for showering and drinking and cooking and things like that. And on that underway, which was a test, what's called a test cruise, we went 3 weeks with one female who was a technician on the submarine. And coincidentally, because we didn't have it, we were testing out the new reverse osmosis unit. None of us could shower. So for 3 weeks, no one was showering. And everyone was just bathing with sanitary wipes and things like that. But that was one underway where there was a female on the boat. There was one female on the boat. We kind of quarantined off a section of the boat for her so that she had her own bathroom and she had her own living space and things like that, which doesn't usually happen. And then there was one other underway where we had midshipmen, which are cadets at the Naval Academy, who came on board for an overnight, and they, you know, basically got to play around with some of our systems, and they were on board for, I think, 24 hours. But that was it. That was it for us in terms of females on the boat, on the sub.
Yeah.
What about you, JT? Did you have any of those experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the same instances that Walter talked about, the service of women on submarines at the time that we were in wasn't allowed, so you know, we didn't have any encounters with what they currently have as far as the lifting of the quote-unquote ban on female service.
That was always a question, though. Whenever the Chief of Naval Operations would come to our base, that was always a question that people would ask, is when are women going to be allowed on submarines?
Yeah.
Why were they asking that? Was it that they wanted them, or they were curious as to see when this might happen?
I think it was partially intrigue as far as, you know, just curiosity. When is this going to happen? I think people saw the writing on the wall that eventually it was going to happen. I think there's obviously some berthing configuration situations that they would have had to address. And obviously then there's the whole, you know, what happens underway when you have, you know, all these dudes and some females that come on the boat, what happens then? So I think it was probably, and this is, I'm just guessing, but I think it was probably more curiosity than actually wanting to know a definitive answer, because I don't think in 2006 or 2005 the Chief of Naval Operations thought that was going to happen. Maybe not.
This is not fallacy or hyperbole. It was always a female asking the question. Who was the only females that are on the base that we are on in Groton, Connecticut, were either corpsmen or legal men. And, you know, when we have a general quarters, it's an amalgamation of everybody. And it was always in the instances that I was at one of these general gatherings, it was always a female asking. And it usually was a corpsman asking when are women going to be allowed on submarines, just kind of equal opportunity kind of thing. The Chief of Naval Operations at the time always had a quick answer for that. That's something that they're working on. A year after I got out, it actually got passed through.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, what I've seen is that since 2011, female naval officers have been able to serve, and then they've been enlisted, have been able to serve officially since this year. Since that's happened, you guys are pretty plugged into the naval community, particularly the diving community. Have you got a sense from some of your colleagues and your peers how that's been?
Oh, boy. It's not received with open arms, I can tell you that much. Yeah. And that's just in all honesty.
Keep it real.
Yeah, no, you've got this really tight community of dudes, of guys, of sailors who are kind of it's the last bastion of manhood, of fraternity in most of the military, save special operations. So, you know, they're obviously going to want to hold on to it very tightly and not want to let any outsiders in. You know, even us who came onto the boat with our, you know, dive pins and things like that, when you first get to the submarine, you're not allowed to eat sugared cereal. You're not allowed to eat desserts. You're not allowed, if you're not qualified, you're not allowed to read books that aren't related to technical manuals. You're not allowed to smoke cigarette. If you're going to smoke a cigarette, you got to get back to the back of the line. There's a lot of privileges for being senior on the boat, and that's just for the guys on the boat. Now you intermix women, and obviously there's gender lines to place, and there's it's going to cause some hostility because the people in the submarine force are kind of old school. You know, there's still guys that uphold the general kind of sailor rule of going out and getting drunk and getting into fights and things like that. That's a large community of sailors, so you're going to have some resentment towards that, and couple that with the fact that it's just change in general. You know, they've got to change their lifestyle, and they've got to change what they're doing and how they're doing it to accommodate an outsider. So it's been met with unanimous hostility from sailors to the wives of sailors, you know, unfortunately. In my view, unfortunately, because, you know, I think they're probably approaching it I don't want to say wrong, but in not the best practice of just generally introducing everything.
Yeah, and I don't really have anything different to say. There's definitely a I don't know if it's animosity, but it's definitely
animosity. Go on Facebook.
It is probably animosity, but I think it's, you know, again, anytime you change something that's been the entire existence of that form, I mean, the submarine community has always been a male only operation. It's always been that way. So you're going to take hundreds of years, or at least over 100 years of the way that they operated, and now you're going to change it into something different. You're going to have to expect there's going to be a level of opposition to that, and uncomfortableness, and whatever negative adjective you want to put on that as well. I mean, there's just going to be some apprehension from people to say, how is this really going to work? I don't know that. I think they're thinking about it from an equality perspective, but there's a lot of things that happen on board a submarine when you're on mission or something like that. That if a woman has is pregnant or whatever and doesn't know about it, I mean, these are questions that people have to actually say. I mean, these are things that people have to say. And you're on mission, and you're off the coast of some country, and you don't just leave. You can't just leave. You can't get a helicopter to come and pick the person up. You just can't have that happen. So, I mean, that's ship security, that ship's mission, all that stuff has to be accounted for in some measure. So,
if I could interject, and you'll see that JT and I on our own podcast on Diver Tough, we disagree all the time. But this isn't so much disagreements, but those instances happen for people with appendicitis, for people with, that need a root canal or anything like that. So pulling someone off mission has happened before. One of the things that in the Navy in general that ships don't allow you to do is get underway while someone is pregnant. So there are boundaries in place to prevent people from going underway while being pregnant and things like that. But I think the big thing for Submariners, you know, and this is just kind of a dose of reality, when we're pulled into port, when a submarine is pulled into port, there's what's called a petty officer of the deck. Petty officer of the deck controls anyone who gets on and off the submarine. Ship's crew is allowed on and off the submarine because the petty officer of the deck typically knows who it is. Any visitor that the petty officer of the deck does not know, he'll stop that person, check their clearance level, and see if they have permissions to get on the boat. If, in fact, it's a female, if it's a all-male vessel, he was required to say, "Rig ship for lady visitors. There will be female visitors on board until further notice." What that means to the person standing on the pier waiting to get on board is that they got to do something inside the boat. But what actually happens is all the guys on board the vessel are putting away porn or putting away pictures of women on the walls and things like that. They're making the ship suitable from both a physical aesthetic standpoint and both a behavioral aspect for women to come onto the submarine. So instances like that, and that's not something that's new to any submariner. Every submariner knows that term, rig ship for lady visitors. And that's kind of the behavioral action. So, you know, it's definitely a cultural change for submariners. And you know, that's just kind of guys will be guys.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, certainly important stuff to think about. Obviously, you know, it's not just, like you said, the submariner community that's going to have to adjust. There's the rest of the U.S. Navy, and that includes U.S. Navy SEALs. Like you talked about, some of the last bastions of what is considered to be masculinity. Setting aside cultural challenges for now, you guys are both very much into your fitness. Well, I know you're in boxing, Josh. You do a lot of competitions as well, marathons and races and stuff, guys. Like, just on the physical side of things, do you think we're actually going to see our first female Navy SEAL at some point?
Yes. I think we'll see it. We've lowered the standards. Which is not a good thing. Which is not a good thing to lower standards to kind of embrace someone. It's going to take someone who is genuinely special to meet and surpass those standards. Just to, you know, I went for myself. I was on this big kind of pedestal of, do I get married or do I go the route of buds and try to become a Navy SEAL? And so I went the route. I was kind of in the middle. So I went to I did all the buds training, or not the buds training, but I did all the prerequisites to go to buds training. So I took the PRTs, the physical readiness tests with SEALs. And for you to get into buds, you have to be at the 80th percentile, 80th or 90th percentile of the minimum requirement for the physical readiness test. And that physical readiness test is, swim, and correct me if I'm wrong, JT.
Yep.
It's swim 500 meters, get out of the water, do pull-ups, do sit-ups, do push-ups, all a minimum requirement of like 80 sit-ups, 100 push-ups and at least 10 pull-ups. And then you go and you do a mile and a half run with your boots on, in addition to a snorkel qualification test, all in a very fast time. The mile and a half run had to be, what is it? 10 minutes?
Yeah, under 10 minutes, I think.
Under 10 minutes, but 80th percentile is 9 minutes. So you have to, you know, and those are, and that's flat out, you know, really kicking butt in terms of exercise. And you know, I've run it with women, I've run it with males, and I've never nowadays I get beat all the time in my obstacle course racing. One of my friends is a world champion, and she wipes me up on the floor with her runs. But you know, those standards are hard. And next to impossible for 80% of the male community. Not to say that a female couldn't do it, but to lower the standards probably isn't the right choice. And again, male dominated community. I'm not opposed to it at all. You just need a very special female to hit those standards. Like a male.
Yeah. Yeah.
JT, I think you look like you're agreeing there with Walt.
I am.
That's the one.
It would have to be, do I think it could happen? Yeah, I do think it could happen. Is it likely that there's a lot of them? Probably not. I don't think there's a high percentage of females out there I could be wrong. I mean, I don't know. We haven't had it open to females before. So, this is purely speculation. There's a lot of very, very in shape females out there. But there's a whole mental aspect. There's a whole camaraderie aspect. There's a whole, you know, I don't know. I mean, the three Army Rangers, there was three Army Rangers that just got, passed the school, and they're the first three females that did that. So, did somebody 3 years ago or 2 years ago think that females could pass Ranger school. Maybe, maybe not. I think it's probably the same type of an argument or conversation, you know. So, it'll definitely take a special person. But to Walter's point, I don't think that the standard should be lowered just for the sake of getting a person qualified or passing the school. I think that lowers the overall quality of Navy SEALs, because guess what? If you lower it for anybody, you're lowering it for anybody. And there's guys that shouldn't be Navy SEALs that are going to get qualified as Navy SEALs that probably shouldn't be Navy SEALs. So it's an elite. Any of the special forces, whether it's Delta Force, whether it's an Army Ranger, whether it's Navy SEALs, Marine Recon, any special forces in the military, there's a certain level of qualification that's there for a very specific reason. So when you start diluting that, you start diluting the entire community. And I think that's something to be at least thoughtful about, and shouldn't just take it, tongue in cheek.
Natalie, would you like to know a secret insider tip on what Navy SEALs do on board a submarine?
Oh, you can't just say that and leave that there. Come on, give
right,
it to me.
Well, right. We've had SEALs on our vessel a couple times, mm-hmm. and what they do. It's like clockwork. When they get off mission, they go work out. Well, actually, they go eat chicken wings and they play Tiger Woods golf on PlayStation. And then when they're done and they wake up, they work out. That's all they do on a submarine.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
I challenge anyone to beg to differ.
There we go. I think that'll be my second podcast for 2016. All of the insights today. Okay, well, I'm glad you guys brought that up, actually, because we've had a lot of discussion about the Ranger School and the females there, so it's good to have a Navy perspective on what's going on. But let's take this into a bit of a lighter turn. We've just hit the beginning of 2016. We're just coming off the back of holidays. I brought up, Navy SEALs. I mean, I can't do that without talking about G.I. Jane. Mm. And, with that, I just wanted to have a bit of a lighthearted chat about female action heroes and what we're seeing lately in films. I'm going to get to Josh's recommendations in a second. But, between the two of you, we've seen not just G.I. Jane, but we've seen Rita Vitasky in Edge of Tomorrow. And, of course, we've got Ellen Ripley from the Aliens movies. And we've got Jessica Jones now on TV. What do you guys think? Are we getting female action heroes right? What would you like to see more of? What could we do less of? Have you guys got your favorites?
Oh, man. Edge of Tomorrow.
That's a good movie.
Underrated.
Yeah,
it is. Underrated.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie. Yeah.
Personally, I talk a lot more than JT does, so I apologize. But personally, so one of my best, one of my really good friends, her name is Amelia Boone. She is a obstacle course racing world champion. Just Google Amelia Boone. She started kicking my butt in 2011. I just got out of the Navy. I'm a Navy diver. I'm a submariner. I'm as tough as they come. I'm a boxer. I get punched in the face. Forget about it. But I met her in 2011 doing the World's Toughest Mudder, which is a 24-hour obstacle course race in the middle of winter in New Jersey. And she just, wiped the floor with me, and she ended up coming in second place, for that race being her first race. But, ever since then, she's just kind of dominated all of obstacle course racing, in the United States, at least. I don't think she's gone abroad, but she's just completely dominated it. Ever since, seeing her, her need to kind of be the best, I've seen a new light in terms of women in athletics. And for her, for me, honestly, and she's a good friend of mine, and it's really awkward to say it, but she's kind of one of those inspirational people where I'm like, you know what, these gender lines are kind of they're very blurred with when you meet women like her. So it's not so much an action hero, but it's her, Amelia Boone, who really kind of sets that tune for me, where I'm like, wow, this girl really, she puts in the work and she kicks butt. She goes to races and she's top 10 qualifying, male or female. So it's one of those situations. But Amelia Boone is for me.
Yeah, and as far as action heroes in movies, I mean, G.I. Jane is probably one of the best. I mean, as far as a woman leading role that plays a quote-unquote action hero or something like that. I mean, obviously, you have, like, the Fantastic Four, you know, any of the Avengers movies, there's people in there. Any of the Marvel comics, there's always some.
But they're not athletes.
They're not athletes. I mean, again, you have to keep in mind that this is an entertainment. I mean, there's an entertainment industry side of this that I don't even know much about. So there's people that are making decisions to put, popular A-list actresses in roles because they're going to get male audiences out there to watch the movie as well as female audiences. So there's an element of that that I think can't be argued against. I mean, I definitely think there's a money-making aspect to this. But as far as the role of a woman in an action hero spot, I think it's completely legit. I mean, I think there's definitely a space for that, and I think it opens up the door. I mean, G.I. Jane was made – when was that movie made? I don't know. The
97 or 8, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, you think about that. That movie was well before the time of the conversation, but, you know, see how relevant it is still today. I mean, the fact that a woman is trying to do this and break barriers that haven't been broken before. And so I think there's a place in American cinema for that. And I think there's a lot of audiences that enjoy that idea or content.
Another thing, my favorite MMA fighter, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, if you don't know who she is, it's going to be hard to Google her name because she's Polish. But she's the UFC, I think she's the featherweight champion at 115 pounds. And she's the most exciting fighter that I know of. And I've been watching combat sports for 20 years, been boxing for 20 years. She is now my favorite fighter just because of the way she fights, in addition to Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm and all these people. So there's a renaissance as of late in terms of women in the role of empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember you guys were talking recently about the Ronda Rousey fight as well.
Yeah.
So, it's more and more, in mainstream sports, you're having women who are being featured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, just on that note about G.I. Jane and what we were saying about Rita Futowski earlier, the thing I love, I mean, G.I. Jane's obviously talking about a woman trying to break into that male community. But the thing about Edge of Tomorrow that I love, and I'm just going to give my 2 cents here, is because Rita Futowski's character, it's just taken that she's part of that community. There's no question that she is the one that's like the superior soldier there. She takes Tom Cruise under her wing and she's like, right, get it right. I'm going to school you now. And it's just part of the terrain. There's no questions asked why she's there or why she's the elite soldier, which I think is kind of cool. And I think, in popular culture, when we get to that point, that's a good moment when they're not just kind of part of the background of the eye candy, but they're just there on their own merits. I think that's a cool place to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very similar to kind of the way, when you're on a submarine. I know we work with just dudes, but with just guys. But when you meet someone on a submarine who knows what they're talking about, where you just know that I need to listen to this guy because this person knows what they're talking about. You don't care about their ethnicity, where they came from, their social background, or their monetary wealth. You just know to listen to that person. Mm-hmm. And I've encountered this in the Navy in terms of working with women, as in terms of working with males, regardless of ethnicity or religion. When you meet someone that knows what they're doing, you listen.
Yep.
You just, and if you're wise enough, you'll listen. And that's, it goes across gender lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Well, finishing on a note, before we get to my final and favorite question, the penultimate one, since it's holiday season, and JT, I know you've seen this film. I just want to get your thoughts on The Force Awakens. What did you think? And without giving away any spoilers, obviously.
I think you can listen to my full, well, I should say abbreviated movie review with plot spoilers. I think, if you're talking about, to continue the dialogue that we've been having, the main character, Rey, is the up and coming Jedi, if you will. And I'm guessing, you know, based on I haven't read the books or anything like that. So, but her plot, the role that she has in the movie, very strong lead character. I really like her personality in terms of the way they portray her in the movie. The overall movie is fantastic in terms of the special effects, but obviously you're going to expect that with a 2015 Star Wars film. You're going to expect that the special effects are going to be out of this world. But, you know, they sort of carried along the same, I think, qualities and the characteristics of the first three Star Wars that came out in the 70s and 80s. And as far as the dark force and the good and the bad, the juxtaposition of the evil versus the good, I thought that was really good. I didn't really know how to feel about the Princess Leia cameo appearance.
Easy with the spoiler. I've not seen this.
She's in the trailers that you see, so I'm not spoiling anything for anybody. But I personally don't know how to feel about her cameo appearance. I don't really know what they were trying to do. Quite honestly, it feels like they forced her into the movie, but that's just my personal opinion. I just felt like that. Hey, I'm entitled to my opinion, man. I'm entitled.
You're giving me too much.
No, I'm not spoiling anything. I didn't tell her what her role in the movie was. I just personally feel that her role was a little bit forced. But the female character, Rey, the main character, she was dynamite. I mean, in terms of the way that she conversed with people, and she was antagonistic, but yet you could see a charming side to her, and it was good. I really, really enjoyed the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, obviously go see it. I would give it a raving two thumbs up. I definitely would give it a two thumbs up. And even if you aren't a Star Wars person, you know, like you don't fall in the sci-fi space, I think it's just a really good movie to see kind of the capabilities that they have in cinema making movies is just crazy. Like the fact that they can build this huge Death Star thing and make it look real, like, you know, it actually is real. And there, obviously, I don't think there's a Death Star. Maybe there is, but I don't know of a Death Star out there. But if there is one, they made it look like it could be actually real. So
We're just saying to the Pentagon and Department of Defense, if Hollywood can build this stuff on time and on budget, just saying.
Yeah,
you
might be
just
able to get
saying.
On that. Yep.
Oh, no, Natalie, you're going to have all these conspiracy theorists saying that the moon landing is not real.
Yeah.
They can build the Death Star.
Tell us to put it in the comments. Put it in the comments section.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I think I've got my movie sorted out for this weekend. And guys, my favorite question for 2016. You guys, I know, are keen whiskey and scotch aficionados.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, what are your recommendations to our listeners?
JT, you want to go first?
So I have probably a more wide palate in terms of I haven't really decided at this point what I like significantly over another kind. When I drink whiskey or whenever I drink any beverage for that matter, wine, it doesn't have to be a 16-year-old or a 12-year-old or something like that. Scotch. One of my personal favorites now, and I've been drinking it as of late, is Johnny Walker Double Black. Not Johnny Walker Black, but Johnny Walker Double Black. And some people see the Johnny Walker label and they say, oh, this is just marketing and whatnot. It's actually a very good whiskey. And for those of you that are single malt purists, I would say that you should try it. It's very Islay. It's very smoky. And it really very easy. You can drink it neat. I wouldn't put an ice cube in it personally, but you could if you wanted. I think it's really good neat. And so I'm not a pure single malt guy. I like single malts, but Johnny Walker Double Black is my spirit of choice as of late.
Interesting.
That was really good.
Yeah. Well,
I'm gonna try it.
I haven't done.
I think I am too. I'm like,
should.
What am I doing?
I should. And you can
Friday,
you can get
Friday.
It at a pretty decent price. I mean, it's not an $80 bottle of scotch. So you know, so anybody can really afford it. It's in probably the $30 to $35 depending on where you get it. I get it at Costco, and I can get a bottle for under $30. But
I don't think they have Costco in
they don't
Australia.
Yeah, they probably don't have. But if you're here
you
in the
what?
States and
you
can
know
get
what? We do.
You can piggyback.
We do. We have Costco now.
You do? Okay,
oh, wow.
So there you go.
Dangerous.
Yes,
so
it is.
I've
dangerous.
Been,
like,
drop a lot of money.
2 liters of mayonnaise,
there.
I get my 2 liters of mayonnaise.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a good price point. It's for the price. I mean, it's probably because they're doing volume of it, but it for the price point, you can't get a single malt at that price point that tastes as good, in my opinion. But
wow.
Oh my God! Welcome to America.
Yeah.
If you want to take a quick trip to America, just go to Costco.
That's very true. It's like the McDonald's for wholesale clubs. Yeah.
Need a zucchini? Here's 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Supersize me.
Oh God! Yep. All right. So we know what it is. We know where to get it. Walt, hit me. What do you reckon?
So I'm currently drinking the Laphroaig Cardeus, which is the new one. This one's the 200th anniversary edition. It's good, but I'm going to, if we're talking my favorites, it's always La Gavelin, the 16-year-old. That is always my favorite scotch just because it's right in between any Islay that we're talking about. Just like JT said, Islay spelled I-S-L-A-Y. Any Islay single malt scotch, is going to be on your smokier end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be as warm going down. So for me, the La Gavelin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. I might be butchering the name, but La Gavelin for me is the 16-year-old is perfect. It's about, $80 or $90 US. It's well worth it if you just want something to sip on that you don't want to get hammered on.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that I don't drink anything but scotch, so when I have a single beer or a single glass of wine, I'm completely drunk.
Yeah, I kind of have a bit of a weird drinking history. I've kind of hit scotch and whiskey hard, and I drink the occasional red, but definitely scotch and whiskey. I have to say, you know, given the little blogging community, thank you, Ryan Evans of War on the Rocks. We recently hit it hard on the scotch. We really did do War on the Rocks, or except neat in my case, and I hit Dalwhinnie up on that occasion. Ladies and gentlemen, never go drinking with Ryan Evans, who's over 6 foot, and I am not. I, on the other hand, enjoyed a little bit of Glenlivet last night at my Lauryn Hill concert.
Oh,
nah, I wouldn't
nice.
Say it's bad. I wouldn't say it's something I would have gone by default. My bottle at home is a bottle of Talisker 10-year-old single malt. That's pretty good if you like something very strong, very, very smoky. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for something nice at the end of the night, not too much of a hit, the Japanese whiskies are very good. If you're into Yamazaki or Hibiki, those ones very smooth, very nice.
Beautiful bottle with a Hibiki. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. And if you guys are feeling adventurous, Tasmania, this little island off the coast of Australia that we sometimes call our bastard cousins, they actually produce scotch as well. Different flavor. I'm still getting into it. But definitely if you're looking for something a little bit different, Australia does produce its form of single malt as well.
Hmm. Ooh.
Yeah.
How do you spell it? Did you know that you spell whiskey with an E or without an E based on the region? So
no, I did not know that.
Scotch whiskey is spelled without an E. And if you look at American whiskey, it's spelled with an E. Irish whiskey is spelled with an E.
But you guys spelled a whole bunch of things wrong anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I probably spell my name wrong if you go to another country.
Oh, dear. All right. On that note, I think we will probably go get our glass of choice beverage. But look, you guys have been super troopers. Thank you so much for giving us your candid thoughts on some really sensitive topics and your best music and movie picks for 2016. Walt and JT, thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
And to all of our listeners, don't forget, you can catch the long and entertaining versions of Walt and JT on their Diver Tough podcast, again available online, www.divertough.com or via iTunes. Catch them on Instagram. And for the rest of you listening to SimSec at SimSec and www.simsec.org, thanks again for listening and have a wonderful 2016. And